Hello and welcome to Volume 141 of Capital Ideas Live. In today's issue, we'll talk about the decisions involved in tree planting. We'll talk about a new adventure-based recreational activity called overlanding. We'll discuss a bill in the Alabama legislature related to lowering corporate tax rates and why it could be important to you personally. And we'll check in on the timber market. This program is brought to you through the generous contribution of Forester Search, a service that makes it easier to connect landowners with consulting foresters. You can access the site through foresterssearch.com, or there's a link on this page, and you'll be given a roster of consulting foresters who can guide you through the next steps you'll face as a forest landowner. I'm Hayes Brown with the Alabama Forest Owners Association, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. Rosemary Elabash is the Alabama Director of the Federation of Small Businesses and a returning guest. A bill has been introduced in the Alabama legislature to reduce certain taxes, so we wanted to learn more about that. Hello, Rosemary.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
First, there's been a lot of money floating around related to COVID relief. The question I want to know, is that taxable by the state of Alabama? And this particular bill we talked about, what does it do about that?
House Bill 170 removes the tax from all the COVID relief dollars, and this includes those individual stimulus checks, any grants or loans, including PPP, EIDL, and even the Revive Alabama grants that the governor's office expanded to Alabama-based businesses. Under the current statute, all of this would have been taxed. So House Bill 170 by Representative Danny Garrett and also by Senator Dan Roberts in the Senate is the bill that removes that tax.
Okay, good. All right. Well, under the bill that we talked about, House Bill 170 in the House and then the Senate bill introduced by Senator Roberts, how does it treat normal business deductions that we're accustomed to deducting? Are they treated the same or is it different?
Well, they would not have been treated the same. Under the federal bill, all of those normal business deductions you would not been able to deduct. And I mean like your rent, your lease, any equipment buys, all of those normal business deductions that you do in a year. So we had to go back to Congress and say, we don't want a surprise tax increase, and that's exactly what that would have been if they had not put the provision in the second bill that passed on December 22nd. But under Alabama's current statute, they would have, in fact, not been a normal business deduction. So included in House Bill 170 allows you to have those normal business deductions that you would have taken in any other year.
Okay, so it's just restoring what was normally the case and trying to prevent a surprise. And so,
yes, absolutely.
Right. Well, good. Sometimes sawmills or other businesses are located near a state line, and that's the case certainly here in a number of cases. And there's something called an apportionment factor, and I know it's something that most people aren't familiar with. Can you help us understand the difference between a three-factor apportionment and a single-factor apportionment?
I will, and let me tell your audience, this is like tax Chinese, so it is hard to follow, but let me see if I can break it down. Currently, Alabama operates under what they refer to as a three-factor apportionment, and when you talk about three factors, those factors are sales, property, and payroll. Now, in Alabama, currently, the sales are double-weighted, and there's also a throwback provision that allows that if you assess and collect taxes for a company's sales into another state, when that state does not apply a tax to the sale, and that's referred to as a throwback. All right, our neighboring states, and this is where you're talking about those state lines that are so important, Georgia has a single sales factor with no throwback. Mississippi has a single sales factor with a throwback. Florida currently has this three-factor sales double weight with no throwback. So we are, in fact, at a disadvantage, and I'll give you a real example. The Hyundai plant, as all of you know, is located in Montgomery County. When they decided to expand, they put the Kia plant literally on the Alabama-Georgia line because Georgia has a single sales factor and no throwback. So we lost that opportunity for that additional plant. This would apply to sawmills, paper mills, all of those that forest timber owners need for their product. So you've got those right across the line. So this bill, included in House Bill 170, would move us to a single sales factor, just one, with no throwback. So it gives us in a competitive advantage when we've got new people looking for headquarters, for a facility, because they're going to be able to have that single sales tax factor in there.
Okay.
So it's a really big, important part of this bill.
All right. Well, thank you for explaining that. I think I'm beginning to learn a little bit more about it, and you've done a very good job of explaining it to us. Thank you, Rosemary.
Thank you.
Danielle Atkins has been involved in reaching out to female forest owners especially, but we asked her today to be on the program to talk about replanting trees. Hello, Danielle.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
What do you think is the single most important thing that landowners need to keep in mind when they decide what to replant?
Really, the type of land that you own and what pine tree is going to be most compatible. And I'm going to focus on pine trees because we don't tend to do active reforestation for hardwood.
Sure. What type of land do you have?
Yeah, so do you have clay, wet soils? Do you have more sandier, dry uplands? Is it kind of an in-between? And you can plant any pine on any type of soil, just how well it's actually going to thrive and meet your expectations will depend if it's meant for that. So, for example, loblolly is going to thrive a lot better on clay or your wetter soils versus your longleaf is going to do a lot better on your sandier loam or your well-drained uplands. You can plant them in either one, but you can plant a cactus in a swamp, and it might survive, but it won't do nearly as well.
All right. Other than what type of land you have, what are some other things that you need to think about when making a replanting decision?
So there are three other things that I talk to my women about. It's what are the markets near you? How active do you want to be in your land management activities? And, of course, what is your budget? Now, the first two, to me, are the most important because when it comes to your budget, there's a lot of financial assistance programs out there that can really help you. But the markets, you know, are you planting your pines for pine straw raking and you have no pine straw markets? Do you want to grow poles, but you're in a pulpwood, you know, heavy marketed area and it just doesn't make sense to even try to grow those poles? And all of them, again, can fit in the various markets and products, but loblolly is your fastest growing tree. It tends to be the cheapest. You can get really good genetics for saw timber, but it's a great fast rotation pulpwood versus your longleaf is going to provide you some great pine straw revenue. But if you don't have a pine straw market, you know, there's no point in trying to reach that. But longleaf also does provide great, strong saw timber poles as well in the long term. And then how active do you want to be? Do you want to be out there doing prescribed burning pretty regularly and doing other management practices, or do you kind of want to just plant and let it sit and grow and produce something for you later without much activity? And longleaf requires that prescribed burning very regularly. So if you do not want to be out there doing any type of burning, I'm never going to recommend planting longleaf out there. You're going to be more towards that loblolly slash that will thrive very well with just kind of a plant and sitting technique.
Okay. It's kind of a simplistic question, but which pine brings the biggest bucks?
It depends. So it depends on what your markets are, and then it depends on your ground and your soils. Loblolly tends to produce the fastest returns. So if you want to do quick rotations and you have good pulpwood markets, loblolly is probably where I'm going to steer you. However, longleaf, when paired up with pine straw raking, can provide you a very lucrative income until your final harvest.
And I'll add to that, the pine that brings the biggest bucks is the pine closest to the best market. If you don't have markets, there is virtually no purpose to a lot of this. So market
exactly.
Mention is an important factor. Good. Well, thank you, Danielle. I appreciate that very much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Karen Hardy and her husband, Jim, offer experiences related to overlanding. It's a way to get in touch with nature through vehicle-supported adventure. We wanted to find out a little bit more about this new idea, at least new to the Southeast. Hello, Karen.
Hi. Good morning. I'm excited to be here.
Overlanding involves bringing people in touch with nature through vehicle-supported adventure. Why do you think a landowner should consider opening up his or her land to vehicles and camping?
So there are a lot of hidden gems, especially in Alabama. And our goal is to really bring people back in touch with nature. I believe there is a lot of land that has not, you know, been discovered, has not been, you know, researched, looked at by, you know, campers or individuals. So we're really trying to open that up and show people that you don't have to go out of state to find, you know, amazing adventures or outdoor recreation or, you know, getting back in touch with nature. So that's our overall goal, and we would love to be able to kind of have that opened up by some landowners if they might be interested in having people come, and, you know, we could put some programs together to have them do some exploring if that's of interest.
How does a company like yours help landowners tap into this business? We talked a little bit about the demand side of the equation, which is the people that want to do this. Now, what about the supply end of it, the people that have the land? How does a landowner tap into this business?
So we're fairly new, and especially here in the Southeast. It's a growing business. Overlanding is a growing concept in general. We have our website, and we're going to start sharing all this information on not only that, but our social media. So the best way to do it right now at this particular moment is, you know, reach out to us if you've got questions. If you're looking for more details or information about, you know, what's involved or what would be involved. So we're really going to be the main point of that contact at this time to get people out there. We have a lot of information that's going to be coming out, that's going to be advertised. So we've got a lot of people, campers, that are going to be asking questions, and we can put them in touch with, you know, landowners if they'd like to, you know, start a program or a package, kind of like maybe like a safari, you know, kind of thing where we're just finding new paths and new hidden gems. So we would love to be the main point, you know, to answer any and all questions that, you know, may come up to put those programs out there.
So maybe the best way to tap into this would be not just if you're a landowner, not just say, I have land, I'm willing to open it up, but to go to the people that are supplying the adventure experiences and,
mm-hmm.
and network with them, right, and have where they can make a recommendation, because they're going to come to you or a company like yours potentially to get the support and the vehicle and other things that are needed if they don't already have it.
Absolutely. And like I said, it's definitely a growing industry. I have a feeling you're going to see a lot more popping up. So definitely go to the ones that are going to be creating the adventures or the experiences, and they'll have all the details and information for sure.
Okay. Well, thanks, Karen. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Chad Hancock is with F&W Forestry Services, and he's in our markets chair. Welcome, Chad.
Good morning, Hayes. Thank you for having me today.
What are the factors currently that have impacted the stumpage market right now?
Well, you know, we reported in our newsletter that housing starts have continued to increase, and that's been a real positive for consumption of finished wood products across the board, which affects chip and saw and saw timber prices. Some other factors, you know, kind of locally and even nationally, are COVID. You know, a lot of the mills had to shut down earlier in the year or reduce production, which reduced their output. And as housing starts got back going and DIY projects started up, all the finished product that was in storage or being produced at low production was consumed pretty quickly. We have some other things in the South Alabama and South Georgia area, or two new mills that have put competition into the marketplace. You know, that puts a little pressure on the older established mills that have been around for years. Two mills include the Abbeville Fiber Mill in Henry County, Alabama, and GP started a sawmill in Albany, Georgia. With both of those mills, they're taking over 250 loads of chip and saw and saw timber daily. So that is significantly impacting the usage that was out there for those older mills to consume, kind of increasing competition in the marketplace, which helps the landowners in the long run.
All right. That's a hopeful sign. Expanding mill capacity, more demand through do-it-yourself projects, housing starts, and COVID. Those are all some things that can help drive demand. Generally speaking, do you think it's a good time to sell right now?
Hayes, I wish I had the crystal ball to answer that question, but I do think it is a good time to sell right now. You know, we always recommend to our clients that we capitalize on any improvement in the market we see, because we don't know in a month, 6 months, 2 years, 3 years down the road what that market's going to be. I mean, we've got forecasts, and we've got a lot of smart people out there that are looking at what the future is going to bring, but the general economy, change in administration and their new policies could dictate some change. So if you see a good opportunity in your market, I would say capitalize on it at that time.
Okay.
You know, we're seeing an increase in stumpage prices, but stumpage markets are local. Even though the housing market is a broader segment that affects the usage, stumpage markets are local. So I just say stay in touch with your forestry consultant and capitalize on the markets when you see a good opportunity, and don't look back.
Okay. All right. That's good advice, Chad. Thank you for that. Our thanks go to Rosemary Elabash, Danielle Atkins, Karen Hardy, and Chad Hancock. The new administration in Washington is developing plans to deal with climate change. It has appointed a climate czar to coordinate all the various initiatives that pertain to climate and energy. It's a big topic and apparently requires a czar. It's possible that forestry will become part of these plans, and it's certain that the economy on which forestry depends will be as well. So while there's still time to think about this, ask yourself the question, do you think forest management should be linked with something as big as the climate? Forest owners have long made the case that landowners provide benefits to the environment and should be compensated. But is that really the way it's going to work once it gets to once it gets started? Or will just it simply be more restrictions on growing and harvesting trees as a result? What do you think? On behalf of the Alabama Forest Owners Association, I'm Hayes Brown, thanking you for joining us for this issue of Capital Ideas Live.